Hey everyone, welcome to season 2 of Made for Music. I am so excited for y'all to hear what we have in store. I can't believe that it's been over a year since we started this. Thank you so much for continuing to tune in. I can't wait for y'all to hear what season 2 is going to be all about. Most of you know by this point, the intent of this podcast is to paint a comprehensive picture of the music industry, the business, the artistry, all that good stuff. But most importantly, to highlight the resources that are available to you. And if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. Truly appreciate the extra effort. And without further ado, here is season 2 of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast has been playing piano since age 7, studied classical voice starting at 14, studied classical and jazz performance in college, was in musical theater for a decade, and if that's not impressive enough for you, she was part of Pocket Panda, an established indie rock band. But today is about the magical number 2. She started performing in the 2nd grade, started writing songs 2 years ago, is a co-front woman in a band Date Night, which is set to drop their debut EP February 14th, and is here to kick off season 2 of Made for Music. So without further ado, please welcome the insanely talented Anna St. Lee.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on out. I'm really excited to get the ball rolling here on season 2. So I guess we can go all the way to the beginning of 2nd grade. What led you to pick up the piano?
It was actually my sister. A lot of my paths in life have been forefronted by my sister doing it first and me being a younger sibling and following in her footsteps. So piano was one of those things. I think she started when she was like 4 or 5.
Oh, wow.
And then I was like, that seems pretty cool, I guess. So I started taking lessons from her teacher as well, but then I would never practice. So my parents were like, we can't do this if you're not going to practice. So I only took lessons for like 2 years, I think, in elementary school.
Do you feel like that was like influential in how you approach music, or was it just kind of like those 2 years and you're like, I'm not really into this, and then take a break?
No, I think it definitely shaped my mind musically. Just kind of getting introduced to music theory at such a young age.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't particularly enjoy it that time, having that basis was much more helpful once I did become more interested a little bit later in life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's a great way to visualize too, to like have that even early on to go back.
Totally.
So when you started, was it like those classical books, or were you doing, what kind of music were you doing at that time?
Yeah. Just your super basic, like kiddie piano books, like the Bastion series,
yeah.
And that kind of thing.
Those.
Yep.
We used to do like those group piano classes. So I guess, aside from like learning it, like what kind of stuff were you listening to growing up that maybe brought you back around to wanting to play again?
You know, I think it was actually like church music that caused me to start playing again. I like grew up very religious and went to a private Christian school. And so in high school, they needed worship leaders and I could sing, but we didn't have that many people who could play instruments. And so I was like, well, I mean, I kind of know how to play piano. So it was, yeah, kind of like freshman year of high school that I started being like, okay, I do actually enjoy playing piano. So I started reteaching myself and reviewing all those things that I had learned years and years before.
So it was completely self-taught from that point on?
Yeah, until college. Part of my degree was adding in piano lessons. So basically all of high school, I was reteaching myself all the stuff I learned in 2nd grade.
Wow, that's really impressive. So how did that translate? Because I know college, there's a lot of like the piano skills and oral skills classes when you go into that. So how was that transition going from, you know, self-taught to, okay, here's like this regimented approach to piano?
I personally really liked it. I think I was like very determined to get good. And so it was like, I really enjoyed having confirmation of like how to do things correctly. Cause I knew, you know, I knew that I had a good ear and I had okay technique. But I knew that I would need more professional training in order to be able to advance my skills. Like, I couldn't teach myself a lot of those things without some guidance. And so it was really helpful to me to be able to have someone being like, okay, so you're like, you know, you have a good basis, but here are some things that we can improve so that you can get around more easily and just make things happen a little bit better.
Cool. I guess what would some of those things be like for someone who's playing piano, like that someone could try to refine, or that I guess you yourself had to kind of refine or explore when you got into the more classical education?
I think one of the like main things I remember from like the first few piano lessons back in college was that I was playing with very flat fingers. And so the bent fingers is like huge. And, yeah. You know, I like once my teacher said it, I was like, oh, yeah, I do remember that from, you know, way back when. But it was just that little reminder. And then I was like, oh, OK, this does help so much.
Yeah.
And just like how to use your wrists and how to use the pedal appropriately. And, you know, just little things that it's like once you hear it, it makes so much sense and you understand. But until then, you don't really think about it.
Totally. Are there other, like, I guess not to switch up timelines too much, but like when you were being self-taught and then maybe even while you were in college, were there other resources you went to try and like hone in, or were there sites or anything like that that are really helpful for someone trying to learn?
I didn't do a whole lot like online, if that's kind of what you're getting at. I would say because I was doing a lot of like church music, that was actually a really good way to be introduced to like group playing. So like playing in a band format. So not necessarily technique wise, but just learning to collaborate and learning to like work with others and fit into a whole thing is very different than, you know, learning solo piano in a lesson setting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Is that something that was taught as well? Like I know, or I guess I don't know. Is that something that was taught when you were in school, was like how to, I guess, arrange on one's own and then also write for a group?
Not so much in my experience. You get a little bit of that like in the jazz stuff, but I was doing mostly vocal stuff in jazz. So yeah, with the piano stuff, I think a lot of like classical piano training is geared more towards like solo performance or you know, playing with an orchestra or something. So in that case you would learn to play with a group, but I wasn't that good, so I wasn't playing with an orchestra.
and then you also did choral conducting, so mm-hmm. That sounds like a lot, because in from what I've seen from friends that have gone through school, they do like jazz or classical. You were doing both, and then also choral conducting. So how did you manage to balance all of that? And I guess, what do you pull from now from all that stuff?
Yeah. So my major was multidisciplinary studies, which is, basically it's like a create your own major, like choose your own adventure major. So I kind of combined a lot of different styles of music and types of music, as well as English and linguistics classes. But at the school that I went to, there were only like certain classes that non-majors could take. So since I wasn't officially a music major, I just had to like take advantage of whatever classes I could get permission to enter.
Gotcha.
So it was like I was just sort of taking from all of the different genres and combining them into one major.
That's pretty cool, though. Where did you go to school?
University of Oklahoma.
Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. I always thought that's kind of a cool, like, choose your own adventure thing. Like, if you know what you want to learn, that's a pretty neat way to be able to put it all together.
Yeah. So. Especially, like, I feel like nowadays you don't really need a college, like, degree to be that specific. Like, you know, maybe if you want like a very specific job or whatever, then you might need a very specific major. But for the most part, once you're out of college, people are just looking for like, do you have a degree? And so it was really cool to be able to like just sort of float my way through college, like taking classes that sounded fun and that I enjoyed and wanted to learn.
Yeah.
Or like knew that I was weaker in, and like rhythm was a struggle for me. So like for two semesters I took African drumming.
Oh, right. That's actually awesome though, to be like, hey, I need some more rhythm. I'm going to go yeah. straight to the source.
Yeah. So
what did that entail? Like that kind of class?
It was just a drum circle. So we had like, our instructor was amazing. He was like super energetic. And he would just like teach, you know, one or two people a specific pattern, and then the uh-huh. next two people would do a different pattern, and so then you would just like, he would kind of keep the rhythm or do like a little drum solo. So yeah, we had like all different kinds of hand drums. It was really
That's
fun.
Awesome. Have you ever performed or brought that into any of your performances?
No.
Would you be tempted to?
No.
No drum circles on stage.
We did actually. Okay, I take that back. In the album that we just recorded, there's one song where we wanted to like create like a really cool rhythmic section. I think it's actually, yeah, it's in the song that I sent you, so it'll play at the end of this. There's a section where me and our drummer and our producers we created like a little drum circle, and we all had like different sizes of toms, and we're doing like different rhythms together. So I guess that counts.
Nice.
As like incorporating that.
That's awesome. Full circle.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So you went to school in the Midwest. I guess how did you get to Seattle then? Like
so again, my sister.
Right.
I mentioned she was sort of the trailblazer. She moved up here for an internship while I was still in school, and so I would come and visit her like once or twice a year. It was like my first trip. I was like, I'm definitely going to have to move here.
Nice.
So I moved like a month after I graduated from college.
Very cool.
I was ready to get the fuck out of Oklahoma.
That's awesome. So did you come knowing you wanted to do music? Obviously you studied it. Was that like, did you have stuff lined up? Or were you like, I'm just going to pick up and go?
Yeah, I actually, when I got here, I took a break from music for like 6 months. So when I moved up here, I got a job that was my first time doing the horse thing professionally. So I got a job at a stable up in Arlington. I was living in Everett. I had been like so overwhelmed with music stuff. 'Cause like I said, I was in a lot of different types of music. So, I was at a point where like every single day of the week I was like leading worship, where I was, at a rehearsal or at a choir performance, or I was doing something. When I got here, I just like needed some time to kind of reset, because I was feeling pretty burnt out of the like classical world. Mm-hmm. 'Cause all of that stuff is like very specific. It's very like, you have to sound like this, and you're trying to create a very specific sound. And I knew that I didn't want to do any of those things long term. I was ready to do something that like felt like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of like took a break for a minute, just did the horse thing full time for a while. And then I think about 6 months after I moved here, I did karaoke a couple times. 'Cause as it turns out, I don't know how much time you spend in Everett. In my experience in Everett, like if you stay anywhere long enough, it turns into a karaoke bar.
Oh, no way.
So I would just like, there were just random times where I'd be like at a Mexican restaurant and all of a sudden it's a karaoke bar. And so I'd be like, well, I guess I'm going to sing a song.
That's
And so it was at that point that I was like, okay, I enjoy singing again. I miss performing again. So I think I'm ready to join a band. And that was when I got on Craigslist and I found Pocket Panda, and they happened to be looking for a female vocalist, instrumentalist. And so I auditioned and got in, and then I was like back in the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So have you been to Kona Kitchen in Maple Leaf by chance?
Mm-mm.
I was just there for the first time. I think it was last week. And it was funny because it's like this Hawaiian restaurant, mm-hmm. and it also turns into a karaoke bar.
Hilarious.
And so I'm wondering if that's just like the further north you get, the more frequent venues turn into karaoke.
Yeah, there's a little tip for you guys, yeah, and listeners.
By the time you hit Everett, just everywhere.
Everywhere.
That's awesome.
Go to the library, lighten up, it's karaoke bar.
Just, yeah, 10 o'clock, no longer silent. So you joined Pocket Panda, and I guess, were you then in the writing process then, or how did that begin to develop? Because you were doing a lot of, you know, classical and whatnot in college. You joined this band, and I guess, how did it start, or your role evolve as you were part of that?
Yeah, it was actually like kind of the perfect introduction to like the indie music world for me. Cause they were an established band. They'd been together for like 4 or 5 years. They had just finished an album, and they had a female drummer who'd been doing like some backup vocals and obviously drums. And I was like, well, I don't drum, but I can sing and I can play keys, so I could do like some synth parts or whatever you need. So they're like, all right. So I was like kind of very clear with them from the beginning about like where I came from. I was like, this is like really new to me, so just like, I'm just gonna kind of like let you guys tell me what it is you need. Like, I know how to sing, I know how to play keys, so just like tell me what you need. So they were like super understanding and very like gracious and teaching me like how to be cool. And like how to be in an indie rock band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was that departure from like classical and jazz to like indie rock? Like,
it was great. It was so freeing to just like, yeah, I just like felt like I could be on stage and be myself and sing however felt natural to me. And yeah, it was like very immediate that I was like, okay, I feel like I'm going in the right direction, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so where were you playing? I guess I picture, and totally correct me if I'm just off base here, but like the classical jazz scene, especially in college, is like auditoriums and halls.
Yeah.
When you came here, what was like your first couple gigs?
My first gig was the Tractor Tavern. It was like,
oh, right on. Yeah. So pretty different than
yeah.
like a
oh, yeah. It was hall. Again, a great introduction to the music scene here, because it's like, it was their album release show. So it was like, I think we may have sold it out or came close to selling out.
Nice.
And so, yeah, it was like very different from like the very like silent, like concert halls with tons of reverb and like very minimal audiences, because it's, you know, nobody comes to college performances, right, except for like two friends, to like going to the Tractor and just like making noise, you know?
Yeah. And just like rocking out, yeah, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's like a whole... So I guess, how did that change your perspective, or did it change your perspective on like music going from, you know, those different performance styles and frankly musical styles as well?
Yeah, I think it just, it made me feel more creative musically, I think. Mm-hmm. And later it kind of allowed me to start writing, because I had never written a song prior to meeting Caroline, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think being allowed to sing like myself and play like myself and just feel comfortable on stage and not so rigid, I think kind of just allowed me to like relax into music and do it in scenarios that felt fun and felt like I was creating something that was like personal to me.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I guess that's a perfect segue then, is your current projects, meeting Caroline. I guess, do you want to jump in and tell us what's going on now?
Yeah. So, So fast forward, I joined Pocket Panda. We released the album, we toured the album, and then started talking about a new album. Couldn't agree on a direction, and the band broke up.
Oh no.
So it was like, it was a really great year that I got to spend with them.
Yeah.
And they are still like some close friends, and that's awesome. Like, we keep in touch and support each other's current projects and everything. So when Pocket Panda broke up, I just started kind of looking around for something new. You know, I felt more comfortable about what I wanted to be playing, and I felt more comfortable about kind of being a front person. So I, again, started the Craigslist search, and I found some other projects. I played keys and sang for a few other groups in town. But yeah, found Caroline on Craigslist. She had posted an ad with like some music interests and like, I'm looking to start a band. Here are some of the bands that I really like. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I like all of these bands. Didn't know at the time, like reading the ad, that she was another female. And then once I found that out, I was like, oh, this is great. I've like always been in bands with all dudes, because like my jazz band back in college was me and a bunch of dudes. Pocket Panda was me and a bunch of dudes. So I was like super excited about the idea of playing with another female. So we met up, had coffee, and then just like went up to her apartment and played just a couple like covers, and harmonized together a little bit. And we're like, okay, this is pretty rad.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so how did, how do you approach writing or performing with someone new? You kind of just mentioned you went and played covers, but you know, when you jump on other projects, for you personally, what's the most comfortable way to just like, you know, get to a place of like connecting on a musical and like personal level to where you and then I guess determining whether or not something's going to work?
Definitely like listening to the music beforehand is big. Totally. So it's, you know, I've obviously, as any like sort of working musician has experience, like you, sometimes you just play music that you like don't particularly enjoy, but whatever. but and if you're like looking for something long term that you want to like actually start, just like, you know, for me and Caroline, it was, you know, neither of us had a lot of like material of our own to share with each other. So it was just like sending music back and forth of like, oh, this is something that inspires me. Or, you know, for more established projects, if I'm like playing for someone, like just listening to their music ahead of time and, kind of getting comfortable with like the vibe that they're going for, and then figuring out what there is that I can add to that.
Right on. And how did the dynamic change for you? Like you mentioned, you'd been kind of playing with like all dudes going, in your prior projects, and then going into this new project. I guess, what was the new dynamic shift, or like, what did you experience like when you started jamming together, kind of thing?
It was really fun. I think it took us like a month of just like jamming together before we're like, okay, we should like also hang out because we really like each other. And so we like, it was just fun to have like a girlfriend to just like, we would go dancing together or, you know, go out for drinks or whatever. And so it was fun to have like a bandmate slash bestie.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess from that point, you know, you're all hanging out and whatnot. What led to, obviously you'd been looking for projects and whatnot, and you both clicked. I guess what inspired you to then start writing then? Because you mentioned you hadn't written before.
Yeah, it was, I think just, I had an experience back in elementary school where my sister and I went to this arts camp, and I was like a year too young for the like session that we were enrolled in, but for some reason I had to be there that specific week, so they let me in a year early even though I was too young. And my sister and I both enrolled in a songwriting class, and my sister had like taught herself to play guitar and had an amazing voice. Like my sister's voice developed really young. Like she had a beautiful like projecting adult voice at the age of like 13.
Oh wow.
Maybe even earlier than that. And then I didn't really find my voice until much later. And so we like get to the like, you know, the closing night of this arts camp, and everybody's like performing their stuff, and my song was like not at all ready to perform. So like we just like kind of wrote out the sheet music and like put it with the art projects and stuff. Mm. And my sister's song was like, she was able to perform it and it was amazing and everybody loved it. And then like at the end of the night, I found my like sheet music just in like the lost and found pile.
Oh no.
and so it was like, I think it wasn't until like many, many years later that like I realized that that was like definitely something that had like caused me to believe that I couldn't write a song. And so I had like tried periodically every few years, like maybe I'll try that songwriting thing. And it was a total mental block. Couldn't do it. And then I met Caroline and we like sat down. I think for the second time we met, we sat down and just sort of started tossing ideas back and forth, playing chords, you know, just kind of messing around with it. And we wrote like together, I think we wrote like a verse and a chorus or something. And then like she left and I was like, wait a minute, I can do this. Like I, you know, it's not as hard as I thought it was. And so I like sat down and I wrote most of the rest of the song at that point. And then, you know, of course, later we went back and kind of honed it in together. But it was definitely like that moment of just like having a bandmate to just bounce ideas off of. And I was like, okay, this is not as scary as I thought. I can do this. And the mental block just left. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so like once that block, I guess, left, what was like inspiring you to write? Cause you kind of had the mental block up. What then like started coming out and how did that evolve, I guess, from then to now?
So actually at the time that we started writing, I was like in the midst of a divorce. And so I had a lot of feelings. So there was a lot of material. So I was like churning out like a song a week at least.
Oh,
just
wow.
Like,
cranking
them out. So many feelings. And so it actually, like, since then has been really hard for me to write about anything other than sad things. Like, I feel very deeply about, like, traumatic events and things that are sad. And so it's, you know, I would say that's, like, one of my challenges as a songwriter is writing songs that aren't really depressing.
I'm the same way. I'm not very good at writing happy songs. And if they're not solid.
Yeah.
But
I did listen to your album. Congrats on your release. Great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So with those songs that you were writing, like for example, Lonesome Blues has been out for a little bit. Like, was that part of that songwriting batch or like when, like, are you sitting on a stockpile of songs or kind of
that? So Lonesome Blues was actually one of Caroline's songs. So the way that the band has sort of worked itself out is like Caroline and I both have sort of a bank of songs that we've written or at least started writing, and then we'll bring one to the band or throw around like, here's like three songs that I think could maybe work in a band setting, and we'll kind of figure out from there you know what will work. And so right now it's like kind of 50-50 like of songs that we've each written and then a few that we've written together. So yeah, I definitely have a stockpile of sad songs just waiting, which is why I have my solo project. Cause like we want Date Night to be kind of a fun project and, a little bit more upbeat. And so a lot of my songs just like don't fit that vibe. So, my solo project is just sort of for extra songs and for me to have too many feelings. And
it's actually really funny how much that aligns with my projects as well. My band is a little bit more like classic rock, like fun kind of stuff. We deal with some serious topics, but not in the same way that I do. My solo stuff is definitely like, here's all the dark, sad, depressing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But like try to spin it sometimes with like fun music, but like lyrically it's almost never like the fun band stuff. But that's really funny. So I was actually going to ask how you differentiate like when you're writing, like, okay, this is going to be for my solo project or band or but it sounds like that's kind of it. Vibe-wise. Nice. So I guess did you kind of kick off your solo project around the same time then as Date Night?
So like I mentioned, I at the time I was playing with Tobias the Owl, and he was running an open mic at Tim's Tavern, and so I was kind of co-hosting that with him. So I was there like every Monday night, and I finally got up the courage to play my own songs solo. And so I like Tim's is sort of like my home base. Like I feel super comfortable there, and it's like yeah, I feel like it was like where I really learned how to be a solo artist as well. Because it was, you know, somewhere I felt safe and, you know, there's not always a ton of people there, which is great for trying new stuff.
Yeah.
So it was like around that time that I started figuring out the solo thing too.
Totally. I was just talking to a buddy last night about Tim's, and that's like the songwriter like playground.
Totally.
Because the staff is all just really friendly. It's really easy to just get up there. And yeah, whether there's five people or like 50 or 100 or whatever, like it's always just a very comfortable vibe.
Totally.
That's really cool.
The owners there too are very supportive of musicians, and they're great with like booking and just allowing people to like, you know, even if you've never played a show before, you can typically book a show at Tim's, and they're super supportive and welcoming.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a someone I'd also love to ask you about is how do you go about booking a show, or when do you decide to? Do you have a method or any approach to booking?
So my solo project, because it is sort of my like side project, I mainly do that one, like, if I get asked to play a show, like, if I get invited to play something, then I'm like, sure. But I'm not generally actively seeking out shows for my solo project.
Totally.
With date night, we've found that, like, booking shows with friends is always best for getting people out. Or at least, you know, bands of, like, a similar genre that maybe run in similar circles. So just kind of combining forces with other bands, and bookers typically like that as well, because if you come to them with a bill already made, or at least like two of the bands, then that makes their job easier and you can guarantee more people than just like by yourself on a random bill.
Yeah. And do you go to certain venues because of like your sound or anything, or is it just kind of wherever we can get our bill together?
I think definitely there are certain venues that lend themselves better to like bigger, you know, a fuller band sound and versus like solo songs. I don't think I've played any of the same venues solo versus band.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Cool.
So it kind of depends on which project I'm booking for. but then also I've found that like it's easier to get people out to places where you would naturally see your friends. So like, for example, if I go to a show at like the Sunset or the Tractor or Chop Suey, like I can go alone and not worry about it. Like I know that I'm going to see 10 or 20 people that I already know. And so, whereas like, you know, maybe the Skylark or Columbia City Theater are places I don't go as much. And so, if I were to book a show there, I don't think the draw would be as good because it's not somewhere that my friends naturally occur.
Right. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it's a fantastic point. Cause I think sometimes, and our band was certainly guilty. I say our band, but I was doing the booking. So it's my fault. Oh, I just want to play that venue.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, oh, nobody can get there. Nobody wants to travel there. Like, as you pointed out, the draw kind of suffers from it.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it was an interesting point for you that you haven't played in the same place as like a band or your solo. So are there certain types of rooms that, or I guess specific venues in Seattle that you're like, that's kind of for the solo sound, band sound that you target? You mentioned Sunset, Skylark, some of those.
Yeah. So the band we typically have played, I feel like there's a good number of like 250 to 300 cap rooms in the city. So Sunset, Tractor, Chop Suey, places like that, that's what I would seek out for the full band. Cause I think that's like an appropriate size for what we can draw. And then solo, I've played everything from like winery gigs to like the Fremont Abbey was one of my favorites. But I've been talking with Brent at the Abbey about getting date night in there, and it's just like, it's not quite the right venue for the sound. And so we've been kind of talking about how we can rein the sound in a little bit and maybe adapt for the room. I think that is one awesome thing about Seattle is that there's a room for every sound, you know?
Absolutely. And I guess for those who aren't familiar with your stuff, like, how would you describe the two sounds of your projects? That way they can kind of see what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So my solo stuff is just me and a piano. I think a lot of my, like, musical theater and classical and jazz influences come out in my solo playing. It's, like, very dramatic and, you know, I just embrace the feelings and, you know, just invite people to feel feelings with me.
That's a great tagline.
And then date night, like I mentioned before, is, like, we try to make it a little more fun, a little more, like, we're not quite to the level of getting people to dance yet. We're close.
That's tough in Seattle to get people to dance. It's like, if people unfold their arms or pull their hands out of their pockets, that's probably the equivalent of, like, Midwest or down South people getting up and, like, ballroom dancing.
Totally. Totally. Like, if last night we played a So Far show, are you familiar with
So Far? I am. I actually saw that. I wanted to ask you about that too.
Yeah. And the first song we saw, like, some head bobbing. Because, you know, so far it's, like, mostly people are sitting on the ground.
Yeah.
And so, like, the first song we, like, saw a little bit of head bobbing. And I was like, okay, the head bob, I'll take it. I'll take it. And then we eventually, like, in one of the songs, we kind of did, like, a silly orchestrated dance thing. We're like, okay, everybody stand up. And here's, you know, this group of people, you can do this type of dance. And this group of people, you can do this type of dance. And they lasted, like, you know, a good 15 seconds.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's impressive.
But we tried. And there were a few that, like, stuck it out and were good sports about
it. Yeah. I was at the Greta Van Fleet show at the Paramount the other day. It's the most active crowd I've seen in a long time. And by that, I mean people, when they were being told to clap, would clap until the band stopped. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some people will start, or I should say a couple measures after. Because normally it's, like, the second one of the band members stops, everyone just drops their hands kind of thing. And people for a little bit kept going, and then you could see, like, just pretty quickly, like, exponentially fall off as far as who was participating. But even, like, a really well-established band, like a Paramount show.
Yeah.
It's like, but that's really impressive. 15 seconds of head bobbing is, like, because that's, like, a full song elsewhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so far is actually really interesting. Philip Johnson was on last year and kind of talked a little bit about So Far shows. So you mind kind of just like from the artist side explaining, like, what that is, maybe how you book or attend one of those shows?
Yeah. So Far is it's a really cool organization and it's international. So
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all over the world. Like last night, there were people in attendance who had been in shows in Australia and Cape Town, South Africa, and Germany, and it's a really cool organization. The goal is basically, it's a secret show. So, you go to their website and you just pick a town and then a date, and that's pretty much all you know. And then they, like, I think for the most part, at least here in Seattle, the shows sell out every time. So from an artist perspective, it's, like, a great opportunity to play for, like, about 100 people that probably would not have encountered you otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stands for, I think, like, sounds from a room or songs from a room. And basically they just find really unique spaces that aren't actually music venues. And then it creates this really, like, cozy, intimate vibe. And you have just 100 people that are completely captive audience, like, literally captive. Like, at the beginning, the host will be like, you cannot leave. Like, it's rude to leave. Stay for the whole show. So it's a great opportunity for artists. It's a great opportunity for people who, like, you know, for whatever reason, maybe you have, like, a disability or something that prevents you from being able to go to, like, a show at a bar or at a music venue, to be able to experience live music in a much more calm environment.
That's really cool. And is it fully, like, it's, like, fully acoustic or stripped down then when you perform, or?
So typically, yes. The director here in Seattle she came to one of our live shows after she had booked us. And we had initially been planning to do a stripped down set. And then she saw the full set and she's like, no, I want exactly this.
Nice.
So that actually logistically became quite a challenge when it came to, like, setting up last night. Cause we were, like, we had extension cords coming from everywhere. We like, it was just, there was a lot of amps happening. So it was, because they don't provide a PA. You like, you bring everything yourself.
Okay.
Because it's, again, it's not a venue.
Right.
So yeah, it was interesting, but it, you know, it went great. It was really fun. But yeah, it's a very cool organization.
That's awesome. Yeah. And did you reach out to them, or was it that director witnessing your first show that was like, hey, I want you to come play one of these shows?
It was actually, you mentioned Philip Johnson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he's been to a lot of our shows and takes pictures and has become a friend through that process. So I think it was him that that initially like recommended us to her. So she reached out to us. But I know that there is a way to apply, but for people listening, I don't actually know what that is.
It's possible, but we don't know. No, I've seen a lot of those. I've seen more and more kind of Seattle folks, A, attending, which is really cool, and mm-hmm. then artists that are starting to play like for the first time, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that was a fascinating thing, because one of the really hard things to do is like differentiate yourself, you know, as an act in, you know, playing like bars and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. then to do something like that, where it's like, it's a secret. Nobody knows where we are mm-hmm. until like day of.
Yeah.
It's like a couple hours before, right? It's, or like the day of.
Yeah. I think it's, yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, like kind of the general neighborhood, and then it's like a day or two before that you learn the actual address and everything.
Yeah. That's super cool. I've always thought that was fascinating, and I didn't know about it, to be honest, until Philip told me about it.
Oh, uh-huh,
so
uh-huh.
I always thought that was something that was really neat.
Yeah.
So I guess with that, you're playing some shows. Your next show is going to be this EP release.
Yeah. Yep.
So do you want to talk a little bit about that project? I guess we've talked a little bit about writing, but if you have any additional background you want to provide around that, like how you guys recorded, any of that stuff?
Yeah. So the EP is called the Sleepover EP. So for two reasons, one, because we thought it was cute with date night and sleepovers and whatever. the other reason is that our producers, while we were in the process of recording, moved from West Seattle to Tacoma. But we loved them, and again, through the process, became very, very dear friends with them. And so we wanted to continue recording with them once they moved. So we would go down like usually like Thursday or Friday afternoon and stay until Sunday. And like they would put us up on their couches and we would have brunch every morning. And so it was like created over a series of sleepovers.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So it was a blast. I had so much fun recording, and just the dynamic between the whole band was like just constant laughter the whole weekend, and you know, occasionally getting work done, but
yeah,
we like definitely throughout the process had to like find combinations of people who could be in the studio together and actually get work done. And because right. if it was all of us, like it was just like we'd do a take and then somebody would make a joke and we'd have to laugh about that. And,
and then it's like, all right, we're paying to get this thing done.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. So was it like a home studio that they had that they moved, or were you in a pro studio and just traveling, or what was
that? So it's kind of the intermediate version of like a home studio and a pro studio.
Yeah.
So Matthew is kind of the main engineer. He built the studio like in basically the mother-in-law suite of the house that he was living in West Seattle. And so when they moved to Tacoma, they got a house with like a big basement, so he was able to expand a little bit, had like a drum room and then like the control room and everything. So yeah, so he's like definitely making moves to make it his full-time job. It's I think it's like maybe half time right now. But yeah, I definitely recommend them. They're just cool. So great to work with, super professional, even though, you know, there's a lot of fun that happened, like super professional and got everything done and did such a great job.
Cool. And do they have a like a LLC name or a business name?
Yeah, it's called Laser Lady.
Laser.
But it's spelled in Leet speak, so like so it's like letters and numbers, but Laser Lady is the name of it. Yeah.
Good to know. And down in Tacoma.
Down in Tacoma, yeah.
Sweet.
And we can maybe link that on the
absolutely.
On the info for the podcast.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so how did you choose to go about recording with them then? Like, did you have a selection process of like what studio or engineers you're going to use? What did that look like?
So we met Matthew and Johnny, they're brothers, when Caroline and I were in search of bandmates before we had met Phil and Garrett, and I met Matthew through, I don't know, some series of mutual friends, actually, I remember now, but anyway, series of mutual friends, Matthew and Johnny, they kind of helped us sort of like write some of our first songs, because Caroline and I, like I said, I was very new to the songwriting thing. I was still kind of getting my piano chops up to speed with like where we wanted to go. And then neither of us really had much experience like creating the full band sound. We had both done a lot of stuff playing for bands, but not necessarily like creating it on our own. So we had wanted them initially to join the band, and then just time-wise and everything, it just didn't work out. Like that wasn't quite what they were wanting to do at that time. And right. So, we ended up finding Phil and Garrett, who is our drummer and bassist. And then when we started talking about recording, they were just the obvious choice.
Totally.
Yeah.
Cool. And so I guess before going into this process, you've got your solo project and this date night project. What is something you wish you'd known before going into the recording process for the first time?
Ooh.
Or whenever your first time was recording?
Man. I think maybe having a little, I think the pre-production was like maybe one of the main things. I think we definitely could have spent more time there or like orchestrated the songs better outside of the studio. Cause there were definitely some things we figured out along the way that would have been really helpful to know prior to the recording process.
That's 100% what my answer would be too. I did not understand what I could have, how much time I could have saved by like doing pre-production.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so with that, I guess now you've got the show coming up.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach kind of promoting a show? Because obviously this is like an EP release too, so it's there's a lot more to it than like we're playing another gig. It's like this is the whole rollout kind of thing. So how did you go about promoting this? And I guess what would you advise people on when they're trying to, you know, make a big event out of something?
Yeah. So like I mentioned before, booking with friends. So the show is with Crystal and Quiet and Carlene Crawford and the City Lights, who are both bands that we've played with before. We have a lot of mutual friends and fans. And so we got together like a really strong bill that we knew all of those bands individually could do well as headliners, and then just created like a bill that, you know, we knew would have a good draw from the start. And then moving forward from there, as far as like promotion, definitely Facebook and social media, Instagram. We're not really on Twitter, but some people still do that, I guess.
Yeah, that one's a tough one. It's like, if you don't already have the following, it's like so hard for me to just pull up Twitter and do something.
Yeah, so Instagram and Facebook are definitely primary sources for us. And of course, you know, Facebook is making things more and more difficult to actually get coverage, but
it's unreal.
But it still is a very, very helpful tool. And yeah, I think we've got a few things in the works for like promo videos and just like gimmicky stuff that'll be fun to put together. And then hopefully we'll be partnering with like a distillery or a brewery or something and doing some kind of drink special that night. Maybe we've been talking also about like creating some sort of DJ after party situation.
Ooh, very cool.
So we're trying to make it like a party. You know, that's my main goal for any show or event or anything that I hold, is I want it to be a party. I want people to come and have a blast.
Totally. That sounds awesome. And I guess, do you want to provide details around when, or we've talked about, it's the 15th, EP's the 14th, but like where people can get tickets and where the show's at?
Yeah. So we can probably, can we also link the ticket?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
we can
put the ticket link in the description on the podcast. But I think it's probably through Ticketfly, I think, for the Sunset. And then as far as like purchasing the EP or downloading it, we'll have it available on like all of the streaming platforms. except title. we did uncheck that box. so most of the streaming things, and then we'll have physical copies at the release show, and hopefully we'll figure out how to get the physical copies up on our website as well. So it'll be available.
Right on. And who do you distribute through? What platform do you use?
CD Baby.
Nice. Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've heard a lot of people talking about like DistroKid too, and some of the other. CD Baby is just really easy.
Yeah, and there's somewhere I found like a spreadsheet that it's like a pro con list of all of the possible distribution options, and for what we were looking for and what we needed, CD Baby was the obvious choice. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, I've loved literally everything about it except for my solo project. They don't let you use back-to-back capital letters. So every time I have to go, because with Date Night being all capital. So every release, I was like, can I just have this automated to where anytime I release under like DB Stewart, it's fine. And they were like, actually, you're going to have to get a support ticket every single time you want to switch. I was like, why?
That's really silly.
I'm sure they said something similar to y'all. They were like, yeah, our distribution partners just have like really stringent guidelines. I'm like, ZZ Top, ZZ Ward, ACD. That does not make sense to me.
Yeah.
But they really are fun. It's so easy to handle. Mm-hmm. And they're honestly, their support is super easy every time it's like done like that. So
we actually didn't worry about it for the single release. And so our bassist Garrett is also in Pickwick. And Pickwick, for like all of their marketing stuff, does all the all caps thing. Mm-hmm. But they just like didn't even mess with it for the distribution stuff. So Garrett was like, honestly, like, I think it's fine if like on Spotify it's, you know, not in all caps, but everywhere else it is.
Right.
So we'll see.
Yeah. You know, it's just so funny to me that like that's a thing, you know.
It is really silly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm going to transition now to kind of some rapid fire questions if you're ready.
Yeah.
I don't have a title for this segment yet. I should really come up with one. So if you have an idea, go for it. But basically the goal is to try and stump you.
Oh man.
So,
okay.
It's
probably not too hard.
Yeah. So Lucius or the Overcoats?
Overcoats.
Overcoats. Lily and Madeline or Saint Sister?
Saint Sister.
Jazz music or classical music?
Classical.
Writing melodies or harmonies?
Harmonies.
And then do you prefer solos or duets?
Solos, I think.
Solos, yeah. Right on. Cool. Nice. That was actually the fastest thing anyone's gone through that section.
Wow.
So congrats.
Yeah.
And so then I guess just to kind of wrap things up, just to dive in. Well, thank you for sharing your story, first of all, and like walking through kind of what you learned along the way. It's a really cool, really cool story. And I'm really excited for the EP release. I've been listening a lot to Lonesome Blues. So I'm
awesome.
Really, really dig it, and I'm excited to see what's next kind of thing.
Thanks.
So I guess for either your personal projects or Date Night, what do you feel like sets that music apart?
Definitely for Date Night, I think, like I mentioned, a lot of my band experiences have been with a lot of men. And I think that's kind of true, or at least has been true throughout the city. I do see a little bit of a shift happening now, but just I think having a female fronted band is something that is new, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I do think that like having two females as the front people and having just those like super strong harmonies has been really fun, and I feel like, you know, creates a very unique sound. And then we talk a lot in the band as well about like we all come from pretty different musical backgrounds, but kind of combining forces with a similar vision but a lot of different inspirations has created a sound that's like I would say pretty unique and not like anything that I've heard before.
I would totally agree with that for sure.
Cool.
And so with that being said, you know, coming from or having all this background in different musical styles, if you were to like write or perform in a different genre, what would that be?
Man. I think for like keys, I've been really into kind of more like blues, rocky kind of stuff. I think that style is super fun to play. It's not necessarily my comfort zone or like my strong suit, but mm-hmm. I think I enjoy like playing in that style and, nice. And listening for piano stuff in that.
Yeah. Cool. I'm literally trying to do the opposite. I literally have this book here because I do like all like blues rock and I'm trying to like get out. So I just have a scales and modes book, nice. Which is really sad because I should know them way better by now. But so why do you make music?
Feelings. I have, like I mentioned with kind of discovering songwriting as like an outlet for processing my feelings through like going through a divorce. And then like a year after that, I was in an accident with a horse where I was in the hospital for 10 days. And I've had some, you know, as anyone who like is single and like trying to date and stuff, having experiences with that, that create feelings, positive or negative. I think songwriting has just like become the place where I can process those things in a musical way.
Definitely. And then what do you then hope that listeners get out of your music when listening to your tunes?
I think one of my favorite compliments that I've ever received on my music is that it makes people feel safe to feel their feelings. It makes people feel like it's okay to feel whatever they're going to feel. And so I think, especially like in my solo stuff, it's like very honest and like raw and just like, here's what happened and it sucked, or here's what happened and I'm scared or whatever. And just like trying to be super, super vulnerable with the audience and like having a connection and a conversation that way.
Yeah. That's an amazing compliment, by the way. And that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really cool to hear. Thanks. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. It was great to have you on. I know it was a couple months of like, we should do this. We should. And then I like took a break. So I appreciate your patience and I'm really excited, for this release show and we'll be pushing it. Any links that you've got for me, I'll be putting up there. So we'll be getting the ticket link up, the show links, Facebook events, EP, download, stream locations. We'll get all that.
Awesome. So. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thank you. I love the way he pushes back the baby hair on my forehead while I sleep. And he pours me a glass of water before bed and puts my phone on the nightstand next to my head. And he tries to count the freckles on my skin, but he loses count and he gets distracted. Will make me smile.
me.
That was Baby Hairs off Date Night's upcoming debut album, the Sleepover EP, coming out everywhere February 14th. They have a release show the next night at Sunset Tavern February 15th, so be sure to grab your tickets online. Check out the EP, get your copy, and we will see you next time.